WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Marga Gomez is a performer who has played lots of different circuits, the comedy clubs, feminist theater, Latino theater, and gay festivals. She's also written a series of three autobiographical performance pieces, one about herself, called Marga Gomez is Pretty, Witty, and Gay, one about her mother, who was an exotic dancer who grew up in Puerto Rico, and a new one, which is a tribute to her father. He was a Cuban-born comic, MC, and theater owner in New York's Spanish showbiz in the 50s through 70s. His stage name, Willie Chevalier, was inspired by French star Marie Chevalier. Marga Gomez's show is called A Line Around the Block, and she's performing it at the Joseph Papp Public Theater in Manhattan through April 21st. A New York Times review described her as a splendid mimic, keen-eyed sociologist, and captivating storyteller. Her father was quite a storyteller himself. In her show, she tells some of the stories he used to tell her, stories that usually stretched the truth.
Marga, you know how much your steak weighs? 2 pounds. Have you ever tasted anything like that? It's army style. You remember, I was a cook in the army. Oh, you don't believe me? Tomorrow, I'm going to find my medal and show you. Did I ever tell you how I got my medal? Well, I was cooking some chicken for the troops, and I hear something behind me. I pretend I don't notice, and I continue with the chicken. But I always carry a little mirror in the pocket of my uniform. I take it out, and in the trees behind me, I could see the Nazi. But he don't know that I see him. He thinks, oh, that guy, he's just cooking chicken. Now I play a game with him. With one hand, I cook the chicken. With the other hand, I watch the Nazi. I cook the chicken. I watch the Nazi. I season the chicken. A little salt, oregano, limon. I can't tell you too much. It's a secret. I watch the Nazi. Chicken, Nazi, chicken, Nazi, chicken, Nazi. Like that. Then, with my other hand, I take the rifle, shoot behind me. Bam! Got him. Turn the chicken.
Could you describe for us the part of Spanish show business that he was a part of?
Well, I think it was a lot like vaudeville shows, and maybe like what killed vaudeville. He did all kinds of acts. He was a real live entertainer. He was supposedly a dancer in the 50s, and he had this act where he would do at the end, the finale. He'd do a backflip and catch his partner's handkerchief with his teeth and land on his feet. But he went to New York from Havana and became an MC and also an impresario. So he would host variety shows with orchestras and singers like Celia Cruz, of course, the most famous one I think we know of, La Lupe, and then odd kinds of novelty acts, contortionists, a lot like the old Ed Sullivan show where you have the people spinning the plates, but in my dad's show the plates would fall, and then he would have little sketches that he would write like La Familia Cómica, and if he had, let's say, a Mexican movie star appearing in his show that week, then that movie star would be a player in the sketch or a singer, anybody that could act. He'd throw him into the sketch. He had like a series of about 20, 30 sketches and then horror sketches too.
Well, actually, you do one of those horror sketches in your show.
Yes. The 13 Minutos. My dad, it would start out in a cemetery set, and my father would be the host, and he'd say, Soy Caballero 13, that's Mr. 13.
Soy Caballero 13, and I will tell you in 30 minutos terrible events that took place 13 years ago. The one I'll tell you tonight takes place in the garden of Leonardo, a horticultural scientist who spent his life trying to grow an especial orchid that was the color black, 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 like a funeral.
Did you ever have a part in 13 Minutos?
No, I never did have a part in that, but I did get some work from my father. One was actually throwing coffee into the audience. And that I only got to do once because I got so excited, being live on stage that I threw the coffee too hard and I hit one woman in the head and messed up her hair and she complained.
And why were you throwing coffee into the audience?
Oh, why? Because it was a giveaway. It was a, Café El Pico giveaway. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of, when people would like win dishes or something when they, to get people into the theater, not just a show, but they would also have to be merchandise that you get also to go to the theater. And besides that, a Mexican movie. After the live show, you would get to see one of our wonderful movies that sort of aped Hollywood, and they were fabulous. I mean, I couldn't even speak Spanish, but I always knew what was happening in these movies because they were so emotional. Te quiero. Te odio. Ay, ya no puedo tener niños. Déjame, déjame. And those were the comedies.
So if you didn't speak Spanish, then how do you do it now?
How do I do what?
Did you learn Spanish as an adult?
No. It's a source of embarrassment, shame, toxic shame, toxico chamo. I don't know how to say it. But I didn't. See, when I was young, I was raised by a pack of wild Irish nuns, and they called it Catholic school. And they really encouraged us to adopt the ways of the popular culture, the dominant culture. And so I lost my Spanish. Spanish was the first language that I learned. And then somehow I lost it. And now I'm at the point where I know a lot of Spanish words, a lot of vocabulary, but I don't have the grammar. But eventually on my list of things I want to accomplish in my life is a complete command of the Spanish language.
When your father had his own theater and he used to introduce the acts.
Yes.
Did he have a great way of doing that? Could you do him being an MC?
Well, I can't, I can't remember. It was just, it was incredible superlatives. It didn't matter, if this was, a lady he had met at the corner bodega, but everybody was usually directamente de España or de Peru or someplace. They just, they couldn't possibly be from, 169th Street yesterday. They came, they flew into this show. And, and then they would be, the greatest, and they'd have, La Dinámica, La Vedette, Explosiva. Everybody was explosive. The women were all explosive. And so when they were all numero uno, everybody was number one, that week, then they would have a different number one singer.
Did you feel like you learned the art of hyperbole when you were growing up?
Well, yes, but then, then I did go to Catholic school. So I have, I'm sort of skitsy about that, from being, these delusions of grandeur to this, humble martyr mode that I get into also. But I could, I could do it. And I certainly, I'm drawn to being like a publicist. I used to do my own publicity and all that. But yes, I know that bigger is better, and that whenever whenever anybody asks me where I've been, I say España, directamente de España. Yes, I've been in Europe.
One of the things that really interests me about your show, based on your father, is that it brings to life a whole part of Spanish show business from the 50s and 60s that I'm really not familiar with, and it's just really interesting. Is that part of what you wanted to do?
Well, yeah, I think that people are familiar with the musical artists from that time, but there was they were in this context of these teatros, and these teatros were also a place where everybody went. And these were, people coming, from Cuba and Puerto Rico and then the Dominican Republic into New York. And these were people, they were homesick, and this was this was a meeting place for everybody in the community. So it was, it was an event. It wasn't, just all about the show. It was about everybody just trying to carry on and get a little strength from, from the show that weekend and from reconnecting with their neighbors.
My guest is Marga Gomez. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Marga Gomez. Her new performance piece is a tribute to her father, who performed in New York's Latino show business in the 50s through 70s. You know what I'm wondering? What sense you got of adult life? Growing up with your parents, one of whom was an exotic dancer, and the other, you know, was part impresario, part comic, part MC. And then there were all these kind of, you know, interesting characters who you'd meet backstage. I mean, the people you were exposed to in the adult world were all probably very eccentric.
Well, everybody wore pancake, you know, Maron pancake makeup.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody did. My dad did, you know. And I, you know, actually never got into makeup too much sort of now at this stage of life. But so I was definitely, you know, used to flamboyance and people dressed up, lots of cologne, lots of hairspray. And you know, my mom used some, too. You know, people loud, you know, I mean, I'd be going, you know, I'd have to go to school and they're, you know, they would be carrying on and screaming and blending, you know, drinks and partying until, you know, four, five, six later in the morning. People be, you know, I'd be going to school and there'd be, you know, a magician asleep on the sofa. but it was, you know, it was cool. I mean, I was actually able to, you know, to do pretty good when in school when my parents were together. Although I would go, you know, I was going to Catholic school and the nuns, you know, really looked down, you know, on the fact that my parents were in show business and hadn't been married in a church. But I really, I'm very, you know, I've always been very comfortable with that life. And I think it really made it hard for me to think about doing anything else, you know, any kind of regular job.
You must have been so confused going from the world of, you know, this flamboyant Spanish show business to the world of the nuns in Catholic school.
Yeah, yeah. And then as far as sexuality, you know, we had a lot of female impersonator friends, too. That was, you know, that was always very big. That will never die. And so they were always over, too. So that all, you know, so I had a pretty good education right from the get-go.
Here's what I'm wondering. If you ended up in an even greater culture clash than you were in when you were a child and going to Catholic school while, you know, your parents were throwing wild parties after the shows in their house, when you started to perform, maybe now as well, you were playing a lot of gay clubs, mm-hmm. and gay, you know, performance events. And I think, you know, again, it's a question of, you know, what does it mean to be a woman? What images do you have? And you grew up with these images of these, you know, like sexy bombshell performers and your mother an exotic dancer and your father's the real, like, macho, you know, macho guy. And, you know, then you're off performing in the lesbian feminist world.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, yeah, but also, you know, there's a lot of a lot of femininity there. You know, I did a lot of drag shows too. So, you know,
really,
yeah. You know, I mean, there's a range of style right now in the in dyke fashion. So, you know, there are actually some babes who look just like my mom. I think what was the question? Sorry, I was thinking about the babes look like my mom.
About culture clash.
Actually, you know, the performing scene that I went to, I moved to San Francisco and I started playing in the clubs there, you know, really felt like my parents, you know, because everybody was so free and everybody was creating their own legend and their own, you know, it was, I guess, you know, an alternative culture, just as my parents' world was an alternative culture. I think the biggest culture clash was when I was, when my parents split up and I lived in Long Island. That was, because there was no fancy, there's no festiveness there, you know, everything was very, suburban.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was something about, yeah, it was about city life and nightlife. And so,
Being larger than life.
Exactly. So we tend to do that in San Francisco where I live. And
Now, when you started performing as a comic, did you include material about your parents?
A little bit. I think I would start to... I think one of the first jokes I did was about my mom, I'd say, when I was... because I was starting comedy in the early 80s in San Francisco, and I started playing a club called the Valencia Rose that had the gay and lesbian comedy. So they really encourage you to do out material. And one of the one of my first jokes was my mom was very protective because I was growing up in New York. So every time I left the house, she'd tell me the same thing. Marguita, when you go out alone or you're by yourself, I don't care if you're in church or the movies, always sit next to a lady. Don't forget, sit next to a lady. And then she wondered why I never married. But it was true. My mom always, you know, she was, I mean, you know, I don't know what happened to her when she was a kid. Probably, you know, not a good thing. And so she was always worried that, you know, I would get molested. And, you know, and yet she never really realized that I would just continue with these instructions into my adult life.
When you were young, did your father give you lessons in how to put a joke across?
No, my father really thought that I was going to go and be a doctor. In fact, for the longest time, you know, even as he was in his later years and working in this little dive on 7th Avenue here in New York, he was telling his friends that I was in medical school in Spain, and because Spain is always superior to Cuba or Puerto Rico, and I was already performing, you know. I was already, you know, going out to the clubs and in some theater troupes and acting. And he, you know, he always said that was a wonderful thing. And he'd write me letters and say, it's in your blood. Don't forget you have the Gomez Estremera. That's my mother's maiden name, blood. And yet, you know, he just loved to spin a tale.
You know, your father seems like, you know, such an eccentric, colorful character. And yet I can imagine that there were times it was very trying to have him as your father, because he always seemed to have a scheme that yeah. couldn't possibly work. And his stories to you seem to be spiced with a lot of lies and certainly a lot of embroidery. And that, I don't know, was that confusing to you as a child?
No, not as a child. You know, I really, he made me feel wonderful about myself. Of course, when he was really successful, I didn't see too much of him. So he was just this, you know, figure that, you know, was there when I came home from school in his pajamas having his first cup of coffee, you know, before he went to the show. And he was, you know, a hero. He was a hero. And, you know, as I got into those critical teenage years, his fortunes began to dwindle. And also, you know, he began to drink. And that's where the tough part came, because, you know, I was afraid of, you know, to see my father fail. I think, you know, a lot of kids probably have that. Now, in retrospect, and in writing this show, you know, I'm very proud of him, and I want the show to come off as a tribute. I have, again, when he died, I cleaned out his apartment, so, you know, I have some letters that he wrote to me, you know, he was like 2 years away from dying, and he was still thinking that things would change, that if he went, let's say, to Puerto Rico, where there was still a lot of, you know, connections with Latino entertainment, that he would get a break. You know, this was before he got diagnosed with throat cancer. So, you know, it was just amazing that he never gave up. And I think that's something to be proud of, to be so optimistic when... you know, when everything is so difficult, you know, when your method of working is basically gone, and yet, you know, believing that you can overcome that is something that, you know, that I still need to learn from him, and that I think would be helpful.
You know, when people lose their parents, or when a parent becomes terminally ill, people are left with their memories and their photographs. You've kind of made yourself into your parents. You've incorporated them into yourself and perform them.
I know. It's weird. I don't. You know. I mean, personally, my life is that's been my life, really. You know, I was in a relationship for several years, and. And it was a good relationship, and yet I just was driven to do this, you know, I just really think that because it meant so much to them, and maybe because in their marriage I was the only child, that, you know, I witnessed it, and I witnessed it, you know, not coming to fruition. I just wanted to have it done. And, you know, if the shows get hopefully into some other form, a book or, you know, movie or whatever, you know, I'll be happy, because a live show, you know, especially solo, well, I suppose other people could perform it. But, you know, I just wanted to live on. I really want that to be their legacy. And then I really am at the point now that I feel closure with it, so I can actually get into other things.
Like what? What would you like to do?
you know, I could actually do some dumb stuff now. You know, horror movies, you know, romantic comedies. I mean, I guess I'd like to write. I'm a slow writer, and I don't find being, you know, locked up in the, you know, at my desk for days and days and months to be fun. But maybe if it wasn't quite so important and critical, I could write a little faster, and, you know, it would be cool to, you know, to try my hand at that and acting. I mean, all kinds of things.
Okay. Marga Gomez, thank you very much for talking with us.
It was a personal highlight for me.
Marga Gomez is performing her show A Line Around the Block at the Joseph Papp Public Theater in Manhattan through April 21st. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.